what is very difficult to deal with is the big picture of what I call the other reality, the invisible world, that with which we interact without really knowing. We're sitting on a 1,000 feet, 400 meter granite needle that comes out of the Lake of Geneva and connects directly to a vortex. We're actually sitting inside of the vortex. It's the psychic that gives rise to the physical. That's the part that scientists have yet to actually figure out and be able to explain in formulas. There are going to be several events, I think one in 2009, another one in 2011. I mean, people have a tendency of just telling me whatever, whether they're ETs, luminous beings, normal people, they just tell me their stuff, and I was listening. So my whole purpose now is more showing people what to do about the years ahead.
We're here with Michael St. Clair, and he's written a wonderful new book called Zen of the Stars. Tell me about your book.
Well, the book is a product of about 10, 12 years of research. Initially, there were four books, 1,600 pages. I cut them all down over the years and summarized it, condensed it. The book deals with the origin of mankind, our cosmology, where I think we came from, our most probable futures on this planet. And it deals with many aspects of how we're going to go through the next 40, 50 years. So Zen of Stars is the story basically of a time portal and of the Master of the Light, who is a sort of a light being. And we're here in the castle, Chillon Castle by the Lake of Geneva, which is where the novel, the book, actually begins and ends in several dimensions. Now, to summarize the book is next to impossible. I think ultimately it has light encoded in the words, and it does something to the people who read it. It's a consciousness that changes as you go through the 400 or 500 pages. And in essence, it is a condensation of four books. One book was pure astrology, hardcore astrology aspects, discussion of history compared to alignments, very dry and complex. Another book was more about the future itself, about earth changes, about what's going to happen in politics, diplomacy, society, economics, science, and so on. And another book was more about extraterrestrial interaction with humanity. And all of the three parts were too complex for a normal reader. So people who had looked at it had asked me to simplify it and make it so that anyone could understand it. Because the difficulty of the book is I deal with the big picture. What is very difficult to deal with is the big picture of what I call the other reality, the invisible world, that with which we interact without really knowing. So I don't know if it was intentional or not. The result is that readers tell me that something in their life or in their consciousness almost changes when they read it at least a second time.
I know you've been studying astrology for many, many years and the mm-hmm. occult, and that you basically had a background before you ever began writing this. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the formal background is simple. I went to college here in Switzerland. I studied law. I was an army officer. I spent some time in the army. I studied also political sciences, and then I worked for a few clients and left to live in Florida. But I had studied astrology pretty much seriously since I was about 12 or 14. I remember that by age 20, 21, I was certainly fluent enough to explain alignments and to actually practice it, but I didn't until I was 32. After I had left what I would call the real world, the life of law, business, and the boring stuff, that's when I got into the more, you would call it occult stuff, but occult just means hidden, and what is hidden will be science tomorrow. When I say tomorrow, it actually already is. Things that we're talking about, different dimensions, can today be explained in terms of quantum physics and science. Dean Radin, or he wrote Entangled Minds, or Russell Moon, who wrote about the vortex theory. These are things that today we have to be able to talk just matter of fact. Like the elven world, the world of the elves, it's real. It's right around us here. You can actually touch into it and feel it. So these are things that people would normally call occult, like the Lord of the Rings, but it's a reality. And you can't really study it, you have to live in it. the astrology part is easy to study. That's relatively linear thinking. But the things I talk and write about are about the psychic mind, about the non-linear mind. And what I basically say in my, not teachings, but in what I explain to people and in my book is that we're coming into a time now where the linear mind is going to switch off, not like a light switch, but dim down and fade out, whereas the psychic mind is going to come up. And in that transition, that's when the things we're talking about will become very easy to understand. But for now, most people are functioning in a linear way, and they cannot really understand what the psychic mind is about. However, the overall worldwide psychic mind is coming up.
Can you tell us a little bit about where we're actually shooting this? Because this is a very mystical, interesting place. We're here in Montreux, Switzerland, and in a marvelous castle. And this castle factors in your work.
Yes, we're actually sitting on the granite needle. We're sitting on a 1,000 feet, 400 meter granite needle that comes out of the Lake of Geneva and connects directly to a vortex. We're actually sitting inside of the vortex.
Fabulous.
It's now near sunset time. So you have a very quiet energy. We can maybe feel it, although we're working here. But this is a place that probably was settled in human history by the Celts in about 600-700 of our time. I mean about 1400 years ago.
Okay.
But the other reality is more likely that this place had existed on top of the granite needle for maybe as much as 4,000 or 5,000 years. We just don't know. The traces are very old. The formal history begins around the 11th, 12th century. So as far as linear mind is concerned, this is a Templar castle. This is a typical Templar place with art by the Italian and English masters from the 12th and 13th century. It was then rebuilt and built over it many, many times up to the 17th century, when pretty much the French handed it over to the Swiss. And Chillon Castle became very well known through Lord Byron, because he came here. I think friends of his started working on the novel Frankenstein, and he wrote the famous poem or little story called The Prisoner of Chillon. That's why the place actually got known.
What made you leave the contemporary world in the everyday sense and become something of an occult master, for lack of a better term?
Yes, I see what you mean. I really was that since I was a kid. As funny as it sounds, ever since I can remember, 6-7 years of age, when I was actually here for the first time that I can really remember, I knew what was going on in what I call the elven world, that other world that I describe in the book as linear as I can. But afterwards, the rest of what you call this real life, oddly enough, I remember very little. Like I said, I studied law. I went to a college. I studied law at University of Zurich. I studied political sciences. I mean, I could have been a diplomat or general. I went to the army. I served 2 years here. I was doing what any officer does here, field intelligence or commanding little companies, assisting a general. That wasn't really a big deal. What was interesting was I had a few colleagues, friends older than me, who saw that I was interested in history and slightly different topics, and they themselves were a little into this astrology, you know, nothing particular, but this was enough of a start of a study group to begin talking about these things and studying them. Here in Switzerland we have a very long tradition of these things. This is a Celtic place where the Celts are ultimately native people, just like the native shamans are in America, like the native Indians or like the Aborigines almost. So these are people who are used to living free and living with nature. And so what you call the occult is to us not occult at all. It's just science. It's studying stars, alignments. It's other people who made something occult out of it.
Sure.
Okay, to finish off, after the studies, after working, I worked for a bank. And yes, during the bank days, I saw transactions, I saw the economy. So I understand what's going on in the real world. And then
what
through
were you
friends,
doing for the bank?
I was setting up trusts. I was doing mergers and acquisitions, international transactions that showed me what was going on in politics.
Can you say the name of the bank that you worked for? Is that
yes, I worked for ABN AMRO, for a Dutch bank. And they have a very old tradition from the merchant days going back hundreds of years. we were doing relatively normal transactions. Anyways, through what I was, by normal I mean mergers, acquisition, you know, the nonsense that they do here in this world. But through that work, I met several interesting people who were, again, studying astrology, who were people interested in art. We were doing art transactions, the normal things that you do in banks when you advise private clientele. I then found a group of people who were interested in what I was doing in my part-time life, and they were living in Florida, and they said, why don't you come and live in Florida? I was ready to leave this whole thing I was doing simply because it makes no sense, in my view anyway, to be part of this world, of which I knew early on that it wasn't going to last. I knew pretty early on that while I'm still alive, now here in this life, this is all going to disappear in some way. So what was the point in being part of that when I knew you better prepare for something else? Now, after I finished my book, I had other ideas of what kind of topics I'd like to get into, which are more about what people should do with what we know that's going to happen. And I had wanted to be applied, or that people understood me clearly enough so that they knew what to do with what I know, which is what they know deep down, but they can't verbalize it yet. So my whole purpose now is more showing people what to do about the years ahead, because there is a really great, fascinating future. We're going to discover things that we were just talking about that are sort of occult in the past, but very scientific and simple in the very near future. By near future, I mean 6-7 years from now. This will all be totally normal to talk about these things. So this is your transition, coming out of a real world, normal career, but that was abbreviated and compressed so that by the age of 32, 33, I was well on my way. That was 14 years ago, doing my own thing. But it took me that time to actually finish the book, because it was a long study. And in certain fields of the astrological studies and extraterrestrial interaction and cosmology, I had to study quite deeply, and there are very few who have a clue about this. I mean, there are, when it comes down to maybe 4 or 5 people that I was lucky enough to meet that actually know about quantum physics, about cosmology, about the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, and certain subjects, that there are very, very few, maybe a handful of people who really have spent 20, 40 years of their lives. Those are older guys, or an astronaut who had spent all of his life studying these things. So I had to meet all these people by chance, by whatever you want to call it. I met these people and was able to thread together what would be of interest for a person who is just vaguely interested in what is the future of mankind, what is this planet going to be about, and maybe also where do we come from.
Can you mention some names for me?
You mean
Edgar Mitchell?
Yes, the astronaut, Dr. Edgar Mitchell. Yes, I talked to him for a while. He wrote a book himself about these subjects. His book is called The Way of the Explorer. And he describes basically a transition from a scientist, astronaut, pilot, into a man who lives with the other world, but he tries to be scientific about it. And we talked about a number of subjects. I don't mention too much in the book because there are certain things that we agreed that I could not say for a while.
Okay.
I respect my sources, but I can say I respect their wishes, I mean, and I can say I met him, but I can't be too specific about what he told me.
He did tell you something about the extraterrestrial presence on Earth, isn't that right?
Yes, well, it's not so much him. To him, I think it is clear what he says in interviews. You can read it up, and interviews that are on the internet. I think colleagues of his were much more clearer, so he can always refer to the colleagues. No, but I've met other people who know what they're talking about, who had the direct contact, and I myself had. So when it comes to that subject, we are our source. He simply has put in more poetic terms at the beginning of his book that he felt that he was part of something bigger. Mm-hmm. That's a simple way to put it.
Okay, and you also, would you name any of the other people that you perhaps have dealt with or, you know, got certain information from?
There was another scientist at NASA. He's not well known. That's just someone very, very advanced on a scientific level. And I've been in contact with a number of people over the years via the internet, via correspondence, writing, phoning. So, yes, I mean, I've it would be too long to explain who. The last one that I've been in touch with on and off is Jerry Zeitlin. Zeitlin is a scientist, an engineer, who has worked for SETI, and he left SETI, he's now a retired scientist. And I think the most interesting part of his work is he didn't translate, but he adapted and introduced a brand new work by a French guy called Anton Parks. Anton Parks wrote a book called Le Secret des Étoiles Sombres, The Secret of the Dark Stars. And in The Secret of the Dark Stars, he explains basically where we came from, how long ago this whole story is, which extraterrestrial race is mixed with which. It's way too long to explain, even in two or three sentences. It's just too long to explain. And Zeitlin took this whole thing and made an introductory note on the internet. And that is maybe the most advanced piece of knowledge that is right now around in 2006.
Oh, that's fabulous.
I had more or less the same impression, hadn't written it in that way, although we shouldn't make conclusions. We're always finished when we come to conclusions. But I think it is a foregone conclusion that we're not from here, but we're from the stars. How it exactly came about there, we have huge latitude, different theories. But there are searchers around who have a clue about this. And some who have had a direct interaction, not necessarily physically, like Billy Meyer, but who have knowledge that comes to them. Now, and coming through, when I say comes through them, via language, via advanced or ancient languages that are universal to hear and to write down.
But you yourself consider yourself to be of Syrian descent, is that right?
Yeah, you can see the face, that's serious, yes. And the elven ears.
Oh, really?
You can usually tell by faces, yes, more or less what genetics, mm-hmm, people have, yes. Yes, you can do that.
So you have insight into this?
Sure, yes. Uh-huh. Those people who have a clue, they can pretty much say what the preponderance of genetics are.
And it's probably, you also have Celtic.
Yes,
this is
definitely
true.
Yes.
And St. Clair has a history. Your last name, isn't
the
this
the last
right?
name is a Celtic name, yes.
Yes. But it also goes into, you know, sort of, again, the occult. The St. Clair is going all the way back to, is this the Jesus bloodline?
Personally, this whole Jesus business, if you want my personal opinion, I think...
Yes, I do.
Okay. First of all, it's not so important as people think, because there were many of them, and his story is not the way it's being told. I think he was a master who came, among other things, from Sirius. There's probably a Syrian connection in him. And it wasn't his name, as you know from B.D. Meyer's contact reports with the Pleiadians, or Pleiarans, as he calls them. His name was more likely Emmanuel. Maybe there were even two or three people like him. We're not so sure that. The birth date was not when they say it was more at 4-5 B.C. And his whole journey was, in my opinion, not towards south of France, England, and the Celtic place, but it was back into the direction of India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and maybe Japan. Hmm. And he certainly didn't die on a cross and none of these things. I don't want to go into this too much and shock people, but I think what's important is people need to have a very open mind and relearn everything. What my work is about mainly is about deconditioning your mind. We grow up conditioned from childhood with either religion or science or schools or parents or ideas that are totally unquestioned, and that we just carry around for hundreds of years having no clue about what we're talking about. So it's very important that people today, as we're entering the fascinating changes, Earth changes, cosmological changes, as we're going through really unique things, we need to also mentally and spiritually, forgive the term, grow up. And this growing up begins with deconditioning inside everything we felt we knew, because we don't know. So the Jesus story, to come back to your question, and the lines and all these stories about the bloodlines, it isn't really important so much what bloodlines we were from. We're all extraterrestrial. In one form or another, we're all from somewhere else.
Yes, absolutely.
And we're mixed in some forms. Yes, go ahead.
So you are also working towards what you might term the merging of the dimensions.
Yes.
Where you're being able to see through the different dimensions and connecting them.
Yes.
All people are having this sort of transition happen.
Yes, this is coming now more and more. It began a few years ago. I don't know what it has to do with. The scientists I talked to, we're not so sure. What we know, when we have great stillness, like we have here, a moment where things come together, one can probably feel that there is a sort of a merging of light going on. Everything is, after all, light and energy, and where we may even hear, not voices, but we feel input. It's hard to peg, you know, it's hard to explain. These things are becoming more and more discernible, where you can feel it, hear it at night in dreams, or even see it. Like sideways, you can maybe feel at times a presence. These transitions are going to become, if you had a graph, just much more steep over the next 6-7 years. I would estimate that somewhere around 2011, 14, 17, in that decade, within the next, say, 10, 12 years, it becomes a prevalent or predominant reality, where this three-dimensional reality or world may even become less important than this other reality that bleeds in. I think every person knows what I'm talking about deep down, who sees us talk, and I think everyone has his or her own experience and would word it in different ways. All I know is it's on its way. It began quite a number of years ago, and it's becoming stronger.
And you talk about the earth changes, is that right?
Yes.
In your book?
Yes.
And you're tapping into these both astrologically, scientifically, from something of your contacts, and then what you're talking about in terms of what else? A certain psychic intuition about when they might occur?
Yes, okay. But I use the term earth changes because that's the word everyone has agreed to call it. But I say, first of all, you know, what's happening outside in the real reality is going to be less important. Let me make this really clear. In my book, it's very clear. What is the 3D, the physical world, politics, society, economics, quakes, weather changes, all that, that's what I call the outside world. That is less important than the inside world. What I talk about more in my book is about what we from inside ought to be doing about what's going to happen outside. But I say we shouldn't react to the outside event. We should, from inside, at least one shouldn't say should, but we want to be able from inside to grow into this and be ready to meet it sort of head on without any fear, because there's nothing to fear. It's going to be actually fun, in my opinion anyway. It's going to be very interesting. We're going to meet a whole new science, the awakening of a new geometry, of new mathematics. So there is exciting stuff that is going to happen that is so much more interesting than, you know, what does it matter? There will be quakes, tsunamis, there will be certain years when there are climactic changes, a slight changing of the poles, probably changes of the Gulf Stream, and so on. Those are the physical changes. I estimate they are somewhere between 2009 and 2020, more or less, that decade. You can't really peg it to one event. There are going to be several events. I think one in 2009, another one in 2011. I said in my book, I can repeat it quickly, that there's a young boy in Russia called Boriska. He's known as the little boy from Mars. And he says that in 2009 and 2011, according to his memory from Mars, as strange as this sounds, he remembers very well his life and the pre-recorded idea or message he has. And this is a small kid, 7 years old, that talks in Moscow, in the area around Moscow. Never mind, he also says 2009, 2011 are key years, numbers that he remembers. But he's not sure of what it is in the physical world, whether it's a quake or what nature the event is. But he speaks of a rather large calamity for one continent. Mm-hmm. Again, like I said, I don't think the physical events, the outside world, is what we should focus on. I want people more to focus within, because we are the change, and the change comes from within. So if, say, a handful of people worldwide really live with this change inside and grow strong to be surrounded by the invisible world and work with it, then everything that's going to happen outside will not be important.
That's a wonderful
that's my
way
opinion.
To put it.
Yes.
Yeah, that's absolutely excellent. So can you talk a little bit about what you're sort of aiming to do in this world, though, to sort of put people mm-hmm. into safe places and encourage them to build small enclaves of groups?
Yes, what I suggest, I've been suggesting it for a number of years, first in private and on the internet, and now in my book, there is a couple of chapters devoted to this where I go into detail to sum it up very briefly. We have to see that in the outside world, there's going to be weather changes and a number of physical things changing, from society to climate to you name it, that boils down to the fact that society as such, the functioning of what we call our world, would pretty much disintegrate, if not break down, at some point. Mm-hmm. That's not dramatic. That's not something to get fearful about or have funny feelings of. All we need to know is we need to live what I call a life that is based on earth sharing or sharing with nature, which means we need to move away, at least those of us who want to live comfortably and normally and productively, I feel we need to move away from cities or from civilizations, and we need to live according to shamanic science. In early 2006, maybe you remember there was this little whale, the bottlenose whale that swam into the Thames River and died there. To me, he was the sign that the further away you're from humanity, the better. It sounds a little horrible to say that, but I think that the solution of what I call safe places or enclaves or safe havens or areas of building a new life have to be earthbound, and you want to be able to fish, to have animals around you, to be completely independent of what goes on around in society. In other words, you're going to live like tribes. And still, you will be able to apply high technology, to have free energy. So my idea is to have a network, not just one or two, a network, a chain of so-called safe places where people live according to ancient ways of life, but in connection with cosmology, have a group of people that each will have at least a few scientists, a few farmers, a few technically skilled people, basically groups that live in a what I call a group mind, with these ideas we're talking about, able to simply carry on life and live a life without the ideas that we carried into this life. In other words, who can decondition themselves and begin again. It's a little difficult to summarize all this. Those are big subjects.
That's okay.
So the safe place is basically a place where people begin a new society among themselves while the rest fades away.
So do you want to talk about a little bit about the parts of your book that concern the ETs? Because you talk about why the Greys are here and also what other ET races have to do with our future.
Yes, that's a big question, many questions in one. The Greys, from what I understand, are, I don't know how to say, like a subculture race. There are many races among the Greys, maybe as many as 60, 70, according to research I have. They are what one could call the fallen ones or the archons. You know, the Gnostics wrote about all that. That's very well known. And they are hybrids themselves. Basically, they are, how do you say, they are not even humanoid, they are clones. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, they're not living beings, although they function, but they're not actually alive in a sense of, they have no soul, for instance, so they have no purpose. I think the Greys, they're not a big subject to me. We know from very ancient teachings, thousands of years ago, that we just need to stay away from them. I think they themselves are a sub-race or a slave race, is maybe the better term, of the Dracos, of the reptilians, some of which live underground, some of which may be able to travel through the galaxies, I'm not so sure. There are other races out in cosmos who I think bred our race, the human race, comes probably more likely from Lyra or from the Pleiades, from areas that have nothing to do with the Greys, but from what we know from teachings from other races like the Nordic Blondes, like the Pleiadians, there have been wars going on. At some point, tens of thousands of years ago, where they already had interactions with the grays. They already blew up certain areas in wars they had, and some of them landed here, in a nutshell. But you know, what you want me to say much about the grays here is basically keep them where they are, be aware of them, but be careful in the sense that they are very smart, they're intellectually highly advanced, and they use this to deceive people.
And they're working with governments. Isn't it true that they're also working with governments?
Oh, definitely. The governments that are now in charge more or less of the world we have here are pretty much in the hands of the Greys, to sum it up. It's a crude summary, but certainly some of the Western governments, maybe even in Japan, I'm not 100% sure, but they are definitely in charge of the governments. To the point where they can scientifically, physically make them fight with each other. So all the wars we have going on go back to the grays. The one way we get out of this is if we have a direct contact with the other races, which would be the Nordic blondes who already survived wars with them, or maybe this other race that I talk about in the book, which is not a physically touchable race, it's an other world like the Elven world or the Shining Ones. And you have to be in touch with that almost vibration to know what to do or not to do. It's such a big subject, hardly explainable in a few sentences. I'd say we mustn't have any fear of these races. Let's put it this way, they will not make it through the shift. They will not make it through the dimensional shift. They know this, by the way. They are very concerned about how they're going to move on. And I think some of us will even be able to space travel before. What they cannot do is they can't leave here. You see, they're not actually extraterrestrials. The Greys are aliens in terms of alien, but they're from here.
Mm-hmm. So you know this because of your studies, but do you also know this because of some of your contacts in the military?
Yes, partly. I have not had contacts through the military of that. It's more through research, some of which is just my own experience, which is described in the book. That's too long to explain, but I have my own form of contact with a more invisible force, and through signs, through guided signs, where I just know what is more or less correct. And then a lot of it is research. If you really look through the old texts that we still have, through the research others have done before us, Sitchin is one, Jerry Zeitlin I mentioned, Anton Parks, Jacques Vallée, I mean, there's so many highly advanced searchers. Strieber has the whole gray part of the story, of course, well covered. He has now figured out what's what. So when we put all this together, plus our own little experiences, we know more or less what goes on. We know pretty much where to go, where not to go. Do try to work with that other presence that's always around you. Try to feel into what I call the invisible world, which is literally with us. You can grab it at times. At night, you may see blue lights, structures, sort of floating forms. That's it. That's the ET world. The actual ET is there with you. That's that aspect. And then the message of the book in very short words is you decide. I say we are here for free will. We're here because of free will. And that's all we have. But because we have free will, we are very powerful. We're much more powerful than we know. And what these grays and governments, all this whole world wants you to do, is they want to take away a power away from you and have you feel like a victim at best, or at least powerless and disempowered. And I'm saying in the book, become aware of who you are, of where you came from, and wake up to that. Get into yourself and you feel where you actually came from and what is inside of you. Then you will be completely fearless and build a society regardless of what goes on around you. And the more things fall apart, the more you wake up.
Isn't it true that Krishnamurti has been quite an influence on you? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Yes. You could not be not influenced after reading Krishnamurti. I read many of his works for a number of years because I wanted to create a different kind of astrology. I wanted to explain it to people in such a way that they could use it and live with it. Astrology has been for far too long made ununderstandable so that people could not approach it. And Krishnamurti basically always said, don't build structures, don't build theories. And in essence, he said, free yourself from the known. And he said, do not structure truths. You cannot. The truth is not known. It's always new. You have to live it. And so I tried to apply what he was trying to teach people over 50, 60 years into what I'm explaining to people that's going to happen over the next, say, 20, 40 years. My book goes well into 2050, even 2080. And Krishnamurti, for me, has been an influence in as far as I had to face also myself. I had to go into why am I here, what am I doing, what's the message going to be, how will I explain this to people. So in that respect, I owe him a lot because he was a great teacher in the methodology. He had a way of showing people the way to themselves, but he had no method. And he said to people, and I have to say the same, you have to find out for yourself. There is no teaching, there is no method, no structure. There are no religions, no none of this. You have to forget all about it. It's all in you. And each one has to find out for himself, for herself. So you have to be your own teacher and your own pupil.
So what are your plans for the future?
Well, the first thing is to create at least one safe place. I call it a center. It's a teaching center in the sense of an exchange center where I would like to have scientists, very advanced sciences, physics, quantum physics, people who talk about the landscape of the mind, the exploration of the mind. People of that kind, I'd like to come together and share experiences, exchange. So I would like to create a center. That's the immediate future. Next, after that, I don't know. I have to live in the now, like I say. We have to live moment to moment. That's the next thing to do. Then there would be the idea of a network. I'm very interested in cosmology, space travel, of course, and I'm really interested in creating the new technologies that we talk about. For this, I must have the help of scientists. Free energy is applicable. The new geometry is here. I mean, the science is here. It's being suppressed. So I appeal to scientists who have it to come together and say, let's do it. Get out of wherever you are imprisoned and do the equivalent of what I did. Everyone has to do this. There are brilliant scientists around who know exactly what I'm talking about, and all we have to do is do it. And we have to be fearless about this. That's the immediate future, say the next 4 or 5 years.
Didn't you spend some time with the Native Americans?
Yes, I did, yes. They told me two things, very simple. They always said, like Krishnamurti, like all the great sages, they said, just live with us, live very close to us, and live with the stars, and live with in the connection star, sun, earth, very simple. They say, live with that, and then be yourself. Find out who you want to be, and be that. Be excellent at that, at what you do. And don't care what goes on outside. So in a way, yes, people will have to seclude or get out of the way, like the little whale. Had he not gone towards humanity, would have been fine. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen, I think, as I was explaining before, as the linear mind tunes out and the psychic mind comes in, is that most people will no longer be with it. They will try to function in a logical, straightforward, linear way when really everything becomes psychic. There's a higher level of psychic mind of the earth, of the stars coming in, and most people will simply lose it in this because nothing will make sense. It's hard to explain. And so only those who are completely tuned into the psychic will be able to go with these changes. You know, this whole world, everything that we're in, wouldn't exist if it wasn't for the psychic. It's the psychic that gives rise to the physical. That's the part that scientists have yet to actually figure out and be able to explain in formulas. So my contact is more with the what I call the luminous mm-hmm. ones, and they would call them the shining ones in the old language. And at times at night you will see a bluish presence that creates a light. But they are formless. You can't like talk to them and touch them, but you feel something's there. Mm-hmm. They don't have names as such. They don't say we're from this star. They're just, you know, it's with you. It's constantly with you.
You know, you said you'd met Cheney, for example, and you said you'd met some other people.
Oh,
in
yes,
your travels.
Yes. I met a number of people, yes.
Perhaps
some
you
of
could
it
tell
is
us
in,
about
yeah,
that.
Some of it I wrote in the more funny story parts of my book. There isn't much to tell. Yes, I met Cheney for a dinner one time with a number of people, and that was 12 years ago now. He was then trying to become president, or he was trying to run for office. I'm not so sure what they were doing. Through some diplomats I knew. I knew a lot of diplomats through my time in Geneva, and you know how diplomats are, they cruise around the world, and so everyone meets everyone. It's not that difficult. he made a pretty bizarre impression on me in the sense of he was robotic, almost like not really, I don't want to say not human, but there was something there lacking. Mm. And very driven. I mean, he's an Aquarius. He's the kind of guy who, he'll get what he wants, and he did get it, and then some. And I was aware, of course, of what they were planning, because they would talk to me. People have a tendency of just telling me whatever, whether they're ETs, luminous beings, normal people. They just tell me their stuff, and I was listening. I was trying to compute what this means. I also met the brother of Bush, the guy who now is in charge of Florida, the governor of Florida. Mm-hmm. And through those types of people that I had met, but throughout fields of society, be it science, physics, NASA, politics, diplomacy, economy. I mean, I met hundreds of people. Some of it is in my book. They're just people, you know. Mm-hmm. And I met them at several points in their lives, so we can then compare what a destiny does.
So you had some exposure to what might happen before 9/11. Is that right?
Yes, yes. We had, as a group of a few friends, a good feeling in 99 that it was time to get prepared, that something not good would happen. We were aware that they were planning to attack in the Middle East. I mean, that was known. I'm surprised that this is a... I have to say it again. I am surprised that it is a surprise to the world. Because it was really known. It was written on black and white papers called Project for the New American Century or whatever. And even European diplomatic people knew that, and they were talking about it among people in dinners and lunches. I mean, we just were hoping it wouldn't happen. We thought it was a bad joke. Mm-hmm. And then I knew that they would go into power and they would do what it takes to do it. I didn't know exactly how 9/11 would happen. That I did not know. I had predicted the ballot recount in 99. I predicted that Bush would be president and be there for his whole term.
And you actually predicted the actual count of the
ballots?
Yes,
I did in writing predict in 99 in a little brochure that there would be a ballot recount. That's correct, yes. Uh-huh. But I did not predict 9/11. There's a confusion about that. I never did. I said that there would be the disruption of air traffic or suspension of air traffic. Mm-hmm. But I did not see or know the event was the towers. That surprised even me. We just knew that come 2001 to 2 in that area, in the time window after he would come into office, we knew that something disruptive enough would happen to open the way into the wars of the Middle East. And we were trying with friends to mitigate the influence, because I feel that normal people can have an influence on events, at least in as far as their attitude towards the event is going to be. And I think when everybody empowers themselves, like I was talking about before, that we know who we are, where we came from, what we're actually about, and I know that as we have more and more people thinking in that way, we'll be able to almost take command of the earth again, because that's our job. We're going to have to be in charge of this planet.